Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. It's game week. USC is playing Washington State this weekend, Sunday evening, early evening, late afternoon, 4:30 p.m. Pacific on FS1. And we're going to do a preview show today, talking with one of the Washington State beat writers, Theo Lawson. We'll have him up a little bit later on the show. I'm going to talk a little bit about what's going on around the USC football program and answer some questions heading into our segment with Theo. If you have any questions or comments for the show, please email us podcast@uscfootball.com or call us or text us at 424-254-9141. Lots of ways to get a hold of us. But we would love, if you have an Apple device, go to the Apple podcasting app and subscribe, first of all, and then leave a 5-star rating and review any of your comments, feedback, suggestions, any questions you have. We love to hear from you, so put those on the reviews, and we'll read them on the air, and we'd love to have you comment there, and when you subscribe and share it with other people, it certainly helps us grow the show. For today, what we had for USC, they're supposed to start full pads practicing today. They were prior to yesterday's sort of strength and conditioning days, Tuesday's strength and conditioning day. They came back. They were off for 7 of the 9 days. Things had been shut down. But now they're getting back at it. So Wednesday, they're supposed to have a fully padded practice, getting ready for the Sunday game. We'll have to keep a watch on the testing all week to make sure the team is healthy. We did get to hear from a couple of assistant coaches this morning that we haven't heard from so far this season, Kerry Colbert and Vic Sooto, so the wide receiver and defensive line coaches, so they got to talk about their position groups a little bit. So that was fun. That was a little bit different. Make sure you check out uscfootball.com. We got a lot of details of what we heard during those interviews. So we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on as far as what's going on in the world of college football. There's been some talk about, what is happening with USC and Washington State. You'll hear from Theo Lawson a little bit later on in the show, kind of talking about where they are. It looks like Washington State is healthy because the Cougars have missed 2 games, so they had a little bit more time to kind of recover than from USC. USC situation probably a little more susceptible to any kind of new positive tests. We don't know exactly how many people are in and out of quarantine, and Clay Helton wasn't really discussing that, I guess you could say, which players or how many players. So as long as there's no new tests, it looks like this game is going to happen, but it's COVID, it's 2020. We just don't know. So we're going to go forward, assuming this game is going to happen. Looks actually pretty good across the Pac-12. We haven't heard of any. The only negative aspect going on in the Pac-12 that we've heard of right now is Stanford really having to go to the state of Washington and kind of get ready for their game. The Santa Clara County, I think we've mentioned this on every podcast, but Santa Clara County declared that you couldn't have contact sports for 3 weeks. And the Stanford basketball team is actually in North Carolina for the, quote, Maui Invitational. So that's kind of interesting. And, right now they're playing at Washington, and then they play Oregon State after that. They probably will be staying up there and playing Oregon State on the road. I believe that was already decided. It was already decided that they would be playing Oregon State in Corvallis. They moved the game there. So their final 2 games will both be on the road, and they're going to have to get ready outside of their state. So they're going to stay on the road. And it's really interesting that this is going on. I've had some people like on Twitter kind of questioning some of my logic about it. Really, you want to take the virus seriously. Everyone should. I think this is something that, we want to make the country healthy. And I think if you're looking at the overall health of the country, you have organizations like Stanford football, Stanford basketball, Stanford football hasn't had a positive since July. I mean, that's an amazing track record where all these players are around each other. And the 49ers and the NFL, they're doing their thing. You have these really almost closed environments. Yes, they're not going to be – Stanford football is not going to be a threat to society's health in Santa Clara County or the 49ers. They're going to be tested every day. Anytime someone's positive, they're out of circulation, they're in quarantine. Like, these people are under, doesn't mean they're always all going to be negative, but as soon as someone's positive, you're not worried about them going to the grocery store and getting people sick. They're instantly quarantined. So they're in this somewhat controlled environment that will be better for the county, for Santa Clara County, than the average household that's in Santa Clara County. So by forcing them to move out of state, it just seems like you're now putting the health the health of society at a much better, higher risk. And so some people argue with me on Twitter about that, but I think if you're going to say any health department wants to do something to shut down the virus and you're going to never disagree with it, well, sometimes they make the wrong decision with the intent of making people healthier. In this case, I feel like forcing the 49ers or telling the 49ers in Stanford, you can't play, forces them to go out of state. And now you're putting the rest of society at more of a risk instead of saying, you know what, we're going to give an exception to you guys like we have in the past because you're doing things in a much more controlled way than everybody else. But that's not what Santa Clara County did. And now I think you're putting a lot more people at risk. They're going to, Stanford football, Stanford basketball, they're going to be on the road out of state for weeks. And I feel like it's just not going to be as safe an environment as it would be if they could be at home. Anyway, all right. So sorry, I'll be off that soapbox, but that's just where I feel about it. We got a text message from Ian in Santa Clarita. He said, so watching the Oregon-Oregon State game left me both feeling happy as USC's rival in the North got handed a loss, while at the same time also knowing this is what the Pac-12 does best, beat each other up. Okay, my question is, do you guys see the way Oregon State's offensive line dominated the trenches against a much more talented defensive line of Oregon, a team that I believe ranked 12th nationally, taking according to Pro Football Focus? This makes one think that it's obviously great to get 4- and 5-star linemen, but look what you can do with 2- to 3-star linemen if they're simply coached up better and practice physically up front. Just a thought, Ian from Santa Clarita. I think it's a great thought, Ian, for sure. I think especially with linemen, you are seeing a lot of people that come in as projects that are 265-pound. They were a good tackle in high school, and they grow into being a great left or right tackle, or they bulk up a little bit and they become a crushing guard, or we've seen centers I think development of linemen, especially offensive linemen, is a real thing, and it's something that has honestly lacked with USC. Like, who are the best linemen that you're seeing getting drafted and stuff from USC lately? I mean, like, an Austin Jackson came in as a 5-star guy, a Chuma Adoga came in as a 5-star guy, and they got drafted pretty high. That's great, but like, you're talking about they came in as highly ranked guys. You want to see more that are projects that maybe they're a lower 4-star guy and they become great. I think an Elijah Vera Tucker is someone that is really looks good. So I think there's someone you can see guys like that. You want to see more of that for sure. But yeah, Ian, it's a really good point. I think that's something you want to see as far as developing linemen. And that's something that I think has been an issue for USC. And it starts with some of the coaches that Clay Helton had brought in and just maybe stuck with a little too long. Stephen Poway said he has a question about Clay Helton's contract. Can you clarify for me? Did Lynn Swann really extend Coach Clay Helton's alleged $4.5 million a year contract through the 2023 season? If so, isn't it clear that Helton will be the head coach at least through 2022, regardless of how this season and next season turn out, because the buyout would be prohibitively expensive? P.S. I know this season, he says, I know this may seem like it's coming out of left field, but I'm anticipating the Fire Helton crew to start revving up again very soon. If SC starts losing some games, some of these close games rather than squeaking out victories. And the whole thing seems pointless to me if he's basically locked in for the foreseeable future, Steve and Poway. So, Steve, yes, we were able to put together information over the last, you know, several months about Clay Helton's contract. It's a private institution, so we don't get to know exactly what's going on. But we did find out in 2018, because of the tax returns, he made $4.6 million, I guess, per year. And, you know, understanding how these contracts typically work at USC, we put a lot of this information in the war room about the kind of raise he would get every year. We were estimating it's about $200,000 a year. So for 2020, he's probably a $5 million a year head coach. Also, we learned through sources that it was a fully guaranteed contract. So signed through 2023. So yes. Does that make a lot of sense? No. Did Lynn Swann do it? Yes. Were there other people around that allowed it to happen too? Yes. Are they all mistaken by doing this? In my opinion, yes. We also know that it's not just how much money's left on your contract when you're talking about a buyout. So if you're going to say you average $5 million or whatever per year on your contract and there's 3 years left or 4 years left, say it's 4 years at $5 million, $20 million left. That's not just what you would have been paid. So if you would have been able to go through and fulfill those years of your contract, those 4 years, there's benefits that you would have received during those 4 years. That $5 million doesn't cover the benefits. And at USC, what the language that we've seen in different contracts, not Clay specifically, but in the general contracts, the rate for a benefit is 33 1/3%. So basically, it's not just buying Clay Helton out for $20 million. You have to add a third onto that. So what is that? Another $6.67 million? Is that, if my math is correct? Yeah. So that's a pretty big expensive check to write. If you're we're spitballing the numbers, but yeah, something like that is tough. It puts Mike Bone in a much tougher situation than he would have been if he could have come in and maybe there was a $5 million buyout, not a $30 million and really the estimations got up to almost $40 million if you wanted him fired last year, because this year on the contract would still be there. As far as locked in through 2022, here's my thoughts. Just from what, you know, what we hear, what I think just from talking to different people, there wasn't going to be a firing in 2020. With the pandemic and all that stuff and all, you know, the contract, like we said, I don't think it was going to be possible. At least the athletic department didn't feel it was going to be feasible to fire Clay Helton if they felt that was warranted, right? USC's 3-0 right now. They're probably going to win the Pac-12 South. So there's like football reasons that you wouldn't want to fire him either. But also, and I, yes, save it for the fire Helton people, by the way, are not, they're not coming out of left field. They're not waiting around. They're completely out there. I mean, they're saying fire Helton all the time, every day, all off season, win a game close, lose, doesn't matter. Like we're hearing all the time. So it's not like they're in hiding right now. They're the fire Helton crew are not in hibernation. They're out in full force and continue to be. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying that they're still there. But for that, I feel like it wasn't going to be, the athletic department doesn't feel like it's going to be feasible for 2020. And so he's going to go into 2021. Now, he'll start in 2021 regardless. And so that contract will essentially have been, it's not going to be thrown away. Like you're paying him for 2021. I feel like if USC wanted to make a move, they could do it with their 2 years left on his contract and make that buyout much more workable. I don't feel like they have to go all the way to the end of his contract or go to 2022. I feel like if there's a real reason that they feel like we need to make a change in 2021, that they could do that either in the season or afterwards. So if you're in the fire Clay Helton crew that Stephen Poway mentioned, my guess would be if you're going to get your wish, it won't be until the middle or the end of the 2021 season. Obviously, got to see what happens and everything, but I don't feel like with the pandemic, with the shot to the athletic department budget, that it was really going to be feasible to do something like that. So that's my opinion on it. You know, write in and give us yours if you have a different thought. One last one. We got Justin in Los Angeles. This is not really college. He says a high school football eligibility. He says, I have a question about whether California high school football players and other athletes will be able to gain extra eligibility similar to college athletics. My son is a high school freshman and he's missed his first season due to COVID. It's really difficult to know that my friends in other states have been able to watch their sons play. I do not intend on allowing my son to suffer another painful year of, quote, online learning with no sports next academic year of 2021 to 2022. Instead, we plan to just have him take a year off, but I'd want him to rejoin school as a sophomore and not a junior. Have you heard anything about whether the CIF will allow high school players to adjust their eligibility due to COVID? Thanks, Justin in Los Angeles. And Justin, I really didn't know. That's not really my area of expertise. So I sent a couple emails out. We have heard that, you know, we knew the CIF was supposed to start up, you know, activities for high school, you know, practices and stuff. I think it was this week or this month. They've pushed that off until at least January 1st. So they're already pushing back on even starting the spring season. Blair Angulo, who does a great job covering recruiting for 24/7 sports out here in the West, I asked him that. He said, and this is what he told me, he says, I don't think they will get the extra year of eligibility unless the player is held back or takes the year off. So if you do take the year off, maybe there's a possibility there. But if it's just you were out there trying to play, they're probably, according to Blair, they're probably not going to give any extra eligibility. So hopefully that answered your question. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be back and preview USC and Washington State.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Peristyle Podcast. We got a special guest to preview the USC-Washington State game. Theo Lawson does a great job covering the Washington State football team and basketball team for the Spokesman Review. He's also AP Top 25 football voter. Theo, thanks for coming on the show, talking about the game.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's been great. How long have you been on the Cougars beat?
This is my fourth year on the beat, fourth year at the Spokesman. I kind of count my years by football season, so I covered all of Mike Leach's last 3 years at Washington State, starting in 2017 and then 2018, 2019, and now this season with Nick Rolovich. So fourth year on the beat.
Yeah, it's I really had some theories because I do a Pac-12 podcast. We kind of try to cover all these teams as you know deeply as we can, even though I focus on USC. I really felt like coming into the season, Colorado and Washington State with new head coaches, there was going to be some issues, you know, just because there wasn't any spring practice, there wasn't a lot of opportunities for these systems to get put into place. But man, both Carl Durrell and Nick Rolovich have proved me wrong. I think just watching those teams play, they just look like they've been around for a while. Were you surprised at all just to see how kind of quickly Washington State came out of the gate, getting a win against Oregon State and playing a really good Oregon team pretty tough?
Yeah, I was obviously a little surprised. You mentioned Washington State not getting any spring practice there. I believe that they were actually one of three teams in the Pac-12 that got no spring practices at all. I think every other team at least got to start spring practice in Washington State with the new offensive coordinator, new head coach, new defensive coordinator. I believe they're the only team kind of restarting on both sides of the ball as far as a new DC, new OC. Washington and Colorado both have new head coaches and had no spring ball at all. But both of those teams still had at least one OC or DC returning, I believe. So Washington State got no spring practice. Obviously lost a starting quarterback in Anthony Gordon, and has three quarterbacks that had never taken a college snap and Jaden Delora and Gunnar Cruz and Cam Cooper. So a lot of newness on both sides of the ball. Not having spring camp obviously hurts a new program. So Nick Rolovich has done a really good job of installing his offense in about 4 or 5 weeks and really getting Jaden Delora up to speed to be able to handle the Pac-12 play right away. And he actually played really well against Oregon State and Oregon despite losing the Oregon game. But they're probably a little bit ahead of schedule right now, and we'll kind of see what's in store after this 2 week hiatus.
Yeah, unfortunately didn't get to see the Stanford game or the Apple Cup against Washington because of COVID concerns. Hopefully everyone's going to be healthy and ready for this one in the Coliseum now on Sunday afternoon. Yeah. But for you, covering Mike Leach, this was this pass-happy air raid offense, scored a lot of points. Nick Rolovich is a very different kind of pass-happy, offense. But it's, I guess, what have you seen are like similarities between the two and some of the major differences between what Mike Leach was doing and what Nick Rolovich is doing and more of the run and shoot kind of style?
Yeah, I actually found it pretty interesting when Washington State hired Nick Rolovich. A lot of the sell was that he wouldn't be changing too much in the offense. That he was bringing his own version of kind of a spread passing offense. And after two games, it really does seem like these two offenses are pretty different, actually, as far as the running shooting in the air raid. Obviously, the quarterback isn't throwing the ball every play like he was in the air raid. You'd have games where the running backs would have between 3 to 5 carries in a game if Washington State was doing really well passing the ball, but they'd only run it like five, ten times a game maybe. Nick Rolovich is actually running the ball a lot more. Deion McIntosh, their running back right now has 34 carries in two games, which probably would set a record, a two game record in the air raid offense. So Nick Rolovich isn't afraid to run the ball and use the run to open up the pass and vice versa. And the quarterback is a lot more mobile in this offense, and Delora is actually the second leading rusher in this team with 54 yards and has a rushing touchdown. So he's pretty mobile back there. He can run and does a lot of run pass option stuff where he'll kind of roll out of the pocket a little bit, scan the field, and either take off or throw the ball. So a lot of new dimensions in the offense, a lot of new things that other Pac-12 teams are going to have to prepare for. But still spread offense where you're going to see Jaden Delora probably throw the ball about 60-70% of the time on Sunday.
Jaden Delora really impressed me from what I've seen in the first couple of games. That's one of the other reasons I felt, Colorado was having a safety play quarterback, and he was only a safety last year, to be fair. But Jaden Delora, true freshman. And you're like, still, both teams have looked pretty good. Jaden Delora, I've been impressed with him. USC's had trouble stopping quarterbacks that have some good mobility, even ones that don't have good mobility. So I think that seems like a pretty good matchup there. But what have you seen from this true freshman, running a brand new offense and really not having a whole lot of time to prep for it?
Yeah, you talk to different players and coaches within Washington State's program, and then they say he doesn't really act like a freshman, play like a freshman. He obviously comes from a pretty storied high school program at St. Louis High School in Honolulu. Obviously, Marcus Mariota, Tua Tagovailoa, Jason Gesser, Timmy Chang, Darnell Arsenault, Jeremiah Masoli also came from that St. Louis program, and there's a lot of pressure there to even win the starting job. They typically have 5 to 10 guys every year to come out to play quarterback at the JV level, and a lot of those quarterbacks actually get run off and have to transfer because the competition there at St. Louis is so high, and a lot of those quarterbacks are pretty used to winning state championships and playing under a lot of pressure. If you're the quarterback at St. Louis, you're expected to win state at least once, and Jaden Delora did it twice and actually didn't lose a game at the high school level until they played kind of this bowl game in Florida or against a team from Florida in Nevada last year. So he hasn't lost a lot of games. He comes in with a lot of experience and really isn't fazed by the Pac-12 or playing D1 football. So I really believe all the pressure he faced at St. Louis and Hawaii really kind of prepared him for this, and he hasn't blinked since he won the job about a month ago.
Yeah, it's a big time program out there. I remember I traveled out there to interview Tua Tagovailoa back in the day. I think there was another USC commit there, and I interviewed him and all that stuff. It's a really cool football program. They do a great job there. You mentioned Max Borgi and the running game a little bit, and he's just been such an impressive running back. We haven't got to see much of him yet. How do you feel he can fit in this run and shoot, and what's his status right now? Where's Max Borgi right now?
Yeah, we're actually not quite sure if he's going to play on Sunday, but at the very least he is practicing with the team again. He hurt his back sometime in preseason camp, and we actually spoke to him I think 2 weeks before the first game, so had to be sometime between that point that interview we had with him and the season opener against Oregon State. So we're not exactly sure when it happened. We're not exactly sure what happened, but it is some kind of back injury that's held him out for the first two games. But he is practicing with the team again. I'm not really sure what his level of participation in practice is, whether he's practicing with a no contact jersey or if he's full go right now. So I think that'll depend on if he plays Sunday. Obviously moving the game back 2 days probably helps Borgi as much as it helps any USC players. Just 2 more days of practice, 2 more days of recovery and working back from the injury. But I'm not sure we're going to see a ton of him on Sunday just because I'm guessing Nick Rolovich wants to ease him back in, and obviously the Cougars have a pretty good running back right now in Deion McIntosh, and don't want to ruin a good thing there. So I could see maybe Deion McIntosh taking the first 2 series of the game, throwing Max in first series and then putting Deion back out for the rest of the first quarter, second quarter, something like that. So we'll kind of see how they rotate them, but obviously everyone's pretty excited to see what Max Borgi can do in the run and shoot offense. Like I said earlier, he didn't have many opportunities in the area to kind of run the ball, and was a really productive rusher in high school at Pomona High School in Colorado. Was, I believe, a two-time player of the year in that state. So he certainly is used to playing in an offense that runs the ball in high school, but obviously hasn't had the chance to watch in the state. So we'll kind of see what happens once Borgi's fully healthy and maybe gets between 15 to 20 carries a game, isn't catching the ball out of the backfield as much, but really, really kind of running between the tackles and doing what he does well.
Who from the receiver group has sort of stood out for you so far?
Yeah, there's actually two guys right now, Renard Bell and Terrell Harris. I believe that they're actually 1 and 2 in the conference and receiving yards per game. And I think actually USC has 3 and 4 in the conference. So we're going to see the top four players in the conference as far as receiving yards per game. But Renard Bell is a Los Angeles native. He's got 16 catches in 2 games, 218 yards and 1 touchdown. Terrell Harris is right behind him with another 16 catches and about 200 yards and actually 2 touchdowns. So those are going to be the main two guys. Both of those guys playing the slot for Nick Rolovich. So it seems like the run and shoot is using the slot receivers more than the outside guys, or at least maybe that's more Jaden Flores' preference throwing in the slot. But behind those two guys, Jameer Calvin, another Los Angeles native who had a bunch of offers coming out of high school. He was actually injured last year, so he hasn't played in a few years. He's their third leading receiver right now. But most of the balls have gone to Bell and Harris the first 2 games. Harris is a really interesting player who they're actually finding more ways to use him this year. He had a couple carries actually in the first game against Oregon State and took one of those about 50 yards to the house for a touchdown to kind of seal that Oregon State game. So they're really creative with how they're using both of those guys. And I expect both of them to get a lot of targets this Sunday against USC.
You talked about some of the differences from what Nick Rolovich is doing compared to Mike Leach, using the slot receiver more, maybe running the football more. It seems like there's also more of a focus on the defensive side of the ball. How have you seen, it seems like he kind of gets it, maybe the importance of defense more than a Mike Leach would have.
Yeah. Obviously, last year at Washington State, defensively was just a mess. The DC Tracy Clay's left after I believe it was five games. They had a really bad game against UCLA. Washington State gave up 50 points in the second half of that game and lost that game after leading by I think it was four touchdowns, about 28 points. So that was really kind of the start of the downfall for Wazoo's defense. And then they also lost to Utah the next week, and Tracy Clay's left midseason, and Washington State never really filled that spot and had an interim DC, co-interim DCs, two of them for the rest of the year, never really regrouped. So obviously that was going to be a priority for Washington State, whether Mike Leach stayed or not. So with Nick Rolovich coming in, he knew a lot about Jake Dicker, who was a DC at Wyoming, also in the Mountain West. So Rolovich was pretty familiar with what Dickert had done at Wyoming, and Dickert brings kind of a different base defense to Washington State with more of a 4-3 look with two edge players on the ends rather than the 3-4 that Washington State had been running with a rush linebacker that kind of rotated a little bit from playing D line to falling back as more of a linebacker. So they actually have a true four man front now, and it seems to be working a little bit better. It's going to take some time to kind of reach their potential, but you're seeing improvements after the first two games, and despite giving up 40 points and 30 points to Oregon State, it still looks a lot better than it did last year.
He seems like one of the guys, as far as Jake Dickert goes, that likes to move guys down, get more speed on the field. So maybe that, that bigger safety becomes like a linebacker, and you know, that bigger outside linebacker maybe is like a rush defensive end or something. Is that something he's been kind of doing, trying to put more speed out on the field?
Yeah, that's always kind of been Washington State's mantra, anyways. You know, just not being able to recruit the big fast guys that typically go to Oregon, USC, UCLA, Washington. Washington State has to kind of do it differently and get smaller, faster guys and kind of use them in space a little bit more and free them up a little bit more. You see linebacker Jahad Woods, a San Diego native, who's been one of the more productive players in the conference. I mean, he had no other Pac-12 offers coming out of Helix High School down there in San Diego, and has actually played really well at Washington State, and actually kind of broke out in the USC game in 2017 when he sacked Sam Darnold late in the game to kind of seal that one up. So Washington State has always been able to kind of recruit these smaller guys who don't have a lot of other offers, but they always find ways to use them well, and certainly Jake Dickert has kind of the same mindset there, using smaller, faster guys and having some smaller players on the edge and having some smaller, faster linebackers. And we'll see how that kind of manifests the rest of the year and in the next couple of years, but so far so good. And I think Washington State will always have to kind of recruit that way, because they're not going to be able to compete for the big, fast defensive tackles and nose tackles that typically go elsewhere.
For special teams, what have you seen from that unit so far under, you know, with what Nick Rolovich has brought in?
Yeah. That's probably the best unit on paper coming back when you have Blake Mazza, who was a Lou Groza finalist last year, one of the three best kickers in the country, and he's 4-for-4 in field goals last year. I think actually made his first 18 field goals last year before missing against Oregon State. So he's certainly one of the better place kickers in the country, and they feel pretty good about him and a punter, Oscar Drugrisovic. I still can't say that name after 3 years. he's one of the better punchers in the conference, I believe, was all Pac-12 preseason first or second team. So he's one of the better ones too. So between those two, they actually have one of the better specialist duos in the country, and actually have Travella Harris returning kicks, and he's been kind of an all Pac-12 guy as a specialist as well as receiver. So he's a dynamic player both in the punt return and kick return game. So Washington State has a pretty good specialist group, and thankfully for Nick Rolovich, he didn't have to worry too much about that group when it came in. He had to worry about the offense, defense, but special teams kind of took care of itself there.
One last thing, just wanted to see, we haven't seen Washington State in action for a couple of weeks. How do you think this one, you know, USC didn't get to play last week, so all this COVID-y stuff, we don't know what's going to happen, but what are your thoughts going into this game? How do you think it's going to unfold?
Well, hopefully we get to play the game. I think Washington State is probably past its COVID issues. You know, it was during the Stanford week when Washington State had nine players into the protocol. If all those players had to either quarantine or isolate for 10 or 14 days, they'd all be out of isolation by at least today, I think, at the very least by Sunday. Hopefully Washington State and the UFC can kind of field a full team, field 53 guys, and seven defensive linemen, seven offensive linemen, and a quarterback. So at the very least, hopefully we get to see a game on Sunday. But I think with Washington State having a 2-week hiatus, that you know it certainly helped get a few guys rest, especially Deion McIntosh in the backfield. He'd taken about every snap at running back the first two games. So he probably needed some time to cool his heels, and we'll see if Max Borgi can contribute there. But just having a few weeks of rest probably helped him that way. But at the same time, you worry about rest after playing 2 weeks and kind of getting in a groove, learning the offense, and getting to play real teams every week. You worry about a team kind of losing that. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see kind of a slow first quarter, second quarter for both teams, and a lot of missed opportunities, missed passes, missed tackles maybe. So we're going to see where that goes, and hopefully it's more of a smooth football game in the second half there.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. Hopefully it's good played. So we you got two opportunities missed, covering the Cougars the last 2 weeks. So hopefully this one will happen, even though it's going to be on a Sunday. Theo Lawson, follow him on Twitter, Theo Lawson, LAWSON _ SR, doing a great job covering Washington State for the Spokesman Review. Thanks so much for coming on, Theo.
Yep, I appreciate it. Anytime, thanks.
All right, that's Theo Lawson. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Peristyle Podcast previewing USC Washington State, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.